Welcome to the SEI podcast series, a production of Carnegie Mellon University's Software Engineering Institute. The SEI is a federally funded research and development center operated by Carnegie Mellon University and sponsored by the U.S. Department of Defense. Today's podcast is available at the SEI website at www.sei.cmu.edu/podcast. My name is Suzanne Miller. I'm a principal researcher here at the SEI, and today I'm very pleased to introduce you to James Edmondson, a frequent guest on our show. And today he's here to talk about distributed robotics in space. So we've talked about other aspects of distributed dynamics, boats, other things, but today we're going to talk about it in space. So I'm very excited about this since I've worked in that arena for a long time. But before we get started on that, remind us a little bit, for those who haven't visited with us before, about what your background is and what brought you to this kind of research.
Absolutely. So my name is Dr. James Edmondson. I work at Carnegie Mellon Software Engineering Institute, and I work in a department called the Software Solutions Division. And we focus a lot on cyber-physical systems and ultra-large-scale systems. And so a lot of what I do is really focused on middleware and verification of distributed systems, generally in hostile environments, things that aren't going to cooperate with you. They're not internet-connected, and they're certainly not highly connected. They're not always available. And so my chief kind of interest is in pursuing artificial intelligence and distributed artificial intelligence, or just distributed autonomous systems. You can kind of think of them as a range of gradients. I'm not talking about self-aware AI. I'm talking about a mission-focused artificial intelligence you've created just to complement what you as a human being would like to accomplish.
And so that's kind of my focus. It's adding sensor capability, adding information to the decision-making process that's needed in complex situations.
And usually it's about, increasing your reach as a person, as an operator, making you able to do more things at once.
Okay. Yeah. So let's talk about, you call them smart tiles. These are components that are meant to be launched into space and collaborate for power and other kinds of missions, collecting power, emanating power, really to support very long-term kinds of mission capabilities that NASA and others are thinking about, but really have a lot of barriers to actually being able to achieve. One of them being, I'm out in this hostile environment and I have limited power and I have limited space to actually work in. So tell us how this idea came about and where are you with it?
Sure. So we started in a place called the Keck Institute for Space Studies, and it's a part of Caltech, California Tech, and it's really a very close coupling with the Jet Propulsion Laboratory there. And so they're really focused on NASA problems. They're really focused on space and a lot of environmental concerns and trying to figure out what kind of the 10 to 20 year vision for NASA will be as far as exploration of the solar system. And so we were in a workshop series called Adaptive Multifunctional Space Systems for Microclimate Control. And it was really talking about some very exotic things, like, for instance, what can we do on Venus? Because Venus has a sulfuric atmosphere. It corrodes everything we put in it. And how would we harness energy there? And so we're talking about some very exotic things about using the winds and various upper atmosphere and things of nature. And another topic came up when we were talking with Jean-Pierre Florial and Carl Mitchell, who are energy experts at JPL. And they were talking about renewables where you could use like thermoelectric gradients. And thermoelectric gradients are temperature differentials, which can create electricity just from having a hot surface and a cold surface. But what Jean-Pierre was talking about was something a little more interesting, that you could create them off a very low gradient. So if you just put something on the surface of a planet and you dug a small hole in there, the bottom of the pit where you dug the hole and the top of it where hopefully it's getting sunlight or something, have enough temperature differential to give you small amounts of electricity. And if you're in remote areas like this, that could be enough to power important things for indefinite periods.
Right.
And so kind of built into this thing, we started talking about what would we do next and how would we make this better? And so the smart tile kind of naturally evolved out of that. And I should mention that there are several collaborators on this, so I don't want to seem like I'm the only person working on this. This was kind of started in Brainchild, kind of the workshop series was Marco Quadrelli from JPL. Jim Like from AFRL Space Vehicles is also in there. And then you have people like Christos Christodoulou, who's at the University of New Mexico, who's working on kind of an important part of this called electromagnetic antennas, which are able to beam, for instance, usually it's signals, but one of the things that was really weird that we talked about here was beaming power.
Yes,
so
I saw that.
So if you could harvest, so we started talking about basically what if we were to make millions of tiles. We were making millions of power gathering with solar kind of power, but also thermoelectric gradients that were able to harvest just from ambient temperature. And you could make these work not only in sunlight, but you could have them on a dark side of the planet or whatever, that as long as there's a temperature differential. And it could be from you seeding heat, for instance. Like you come from a hot part of the solar system, you're warm, you have electronics that are working, you go into the cold part, and just the heat that you already have in there, the availability of the temperature differential that you'll have from the cold surface to this, would be able to give you electricity for a certain period of time,
right.
And as long as you had a deep enough battery. And so we were talking about that, and then we started talking about the beaming part of this, and JPL has some interesting things about beaming across distances. You lose 60% of the power that you might have gained, but if it's an indefinite renewable energy resource,
it's like a trickle.
It's perpetual,
charge. Yeah.
You lose 60% of the energy, but you still have a capability that wasn't even there before.
Sure.
It's like infinitely useful, and so. That kind of branched into this other thing, and what happened was, you know, I kind of came up with a smart tile, distributed smart tile idea, and we started talking about it. I started writing the chapter that came in the JPL report, but there's a lot of software problems that we've been thinking about the SEI for decades about this, and one of them is right here in this ultra large scale systems book. This is a long forgotten tome here at the SEI, written back in June 2016. At least that's when it was released. It was written over years, probably, but. Linda Northrop, various other people, Kurt Wallnau, a lot of other people worked on this. And a lot of the problems that you see in this book about emergent behaviors,
right.
about designing reliable systems and things of nature in these kind of environments, and this was just about internet mostly. It wasn't even talking about space where it's a lot worse conditions. But a lot of the problems that you see in here are things we've been working on for the last 10 years in anticipation of these kind of systems evolving. And it's been kind of exciting to work on something that, you know, you see these correlations directly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So where are you right now with sort of where is this? Have we got where are we in the software problem space with this?
Well, the nice thing about a lot of the work I do is that it's portable to many things. And so the Madara and GAMS middlewares that I've been working on for a while, and that's multi-agent distributed adaptive resource allocation, just call it Madara. You know, that's been around for a while, and it's really about distributed knowledge sharing amongst these autonomous systems in unreliable environments where you have to resend information, where you don't expect things to arrive all the time. And then GAMS, the Group Autonomy for Mobile Systems project, was really about making things autonomous and able to collaborate together.
Mm-hmm.
And so it turns out that these softwares are pretty ready-made for inclusion in this. And so we've already been running a benchmark test in vacuum chambers and other places to see how this runs on a Raspberry Pi and the kind of form profile that we're going to have on the smart tile. And we've already created a lot of the hardware prototypes that we think we're going to put up either later this year, this coming year in 2017, or in 2018. It just depends on when we feel like we're ready to put this in there. Because what we're going to be doing is putting six of these up in orbit, low Earth orbit, for about a year. And so we don't want to mess things up right now and have something that just doesn't work for
a
year.
Sure.
We want to make sure that we have everything designed well. And this is kind of this is a fruit of love. This is a lot of people just coming together working on this. Howard Bloom, Jim Like, Marco Quindrelli, Christos. You got John Velasic. A lot of other people that come into these, you know, telecons every 2 weeks. And a lot of these are working in the labs at GE Global Research Center. Glenn Foreman and Kelvin Ma, and they are, you know, in it every day.
Yeah.
And so. The progress can seem a little slow when you're in these kind of processes and seeing parts fail and getting the correct part in there and doing that iteratively. But yeah, it looks like we're looking at a first prototype in low Earth orbit of about six tiles collaborating, sharing information. I'm not sure if we'll be sharing power yet because this is just a first stage to see if the software layers work. It's really testing out the SEI part of this.
Okay.
Whether or not we can collaborate, whether or not we can do this in space for a year, essentially.
So we can simulate some aspects of space. We
Absolutely.
Can do vacuum testing. We can do, very low temperature kinds of things. We can do some of the radiation hardening testing. But bringing that all together really is an on-launch, you know, kind of thing. So this is what you're trying to do is make sure that everything will, before we do add function, make sure that the basic communication, the basic safety, don't run into other things that are up there. There's a lot of space garbage. So that's really what that test is going to be about, is just really getting that platform to be stable. Is that correct?
Well, hopefully we won't run into too much garbage. I mean, because right now we don't, like our tiles, they're very low weight. So in general, they would bounce off something like that unless it's coming in like a bullet. But for the most part, what we're doing right now, GE's Global Research Center has put up a lot of space vehicles, and along with AFRL Space Vehicles Branch, and they're really bringing their expertise to bear on a lot of that. And so we're at a level of low Earth orbit where it's not, you know, it's not like in conflict with the International Space Station or that kind of stuff. It's really at a lower orbit. And we don't think we're going to have to deal with so much of that. A lot of what we're going to be focusing on is the collaborative nature of the tile, and really thinking of, you know, basic experimentation in space. I fought to have a propulsion system in there, but what we're mostly going to have right now is the ability to rotate the tile so it faces the sun at all times. And so that's really the only locomotion I have available, but it is something I can program. And so as part of the smart tile's autonomy, it's going to be doing that kind of automation.
Adjusting itself.
And also the simple things like voting and auctions for leadership and the tiles, who's going to talk to Earth, because each of them are equipped with an Iridium chipset that can communicate back with Earth. And Iridium is very expensive. You really don't want all of them chatting all the time about the silliest things that they have, what my temperature is and various other things. Really what we're going to design it for is to have one of them talk to Earth, and if one of them fails, they essentially will vote on who's going to be the next leader, and that person will be the kind of proxy for everyone to talk between Earth and the tiles. And so we expect, you know, there probably will be some failures, but that's kind of the genius of the smart tile, is that if you put up millions of these and 33% of them die, I mean, even you still have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of other tiles that can communicate. They can do a lot of tasks like localization for other people going places. But I think one of the more interesting things that we've been talking about with potential customers has been power beaming, because it's not just something that affects space. I mean, if you look at India, for instance, India has a lot of remote locations in it that have no power grid. And so if you were able to beam energy down to the surface of the Earth, you know, and lose 60 to 70% of it as you get there, maybe even 80% of it, but it's more energy than they've ever had, you know, this could be something that could revitalize populations. Hmm. It could help build infrastructure, because building the infrastructure on the ground is very expensive. But if you could service it from space, essentially, then we think that shows a lot of the power. Another kind of place we've been talking to is that the satellites themselves need power. A lot of satellites, one of the things you have to understand about any kind of energy source in space is you can't just send humans to fix it, so it just degrades over time. It gets worse. And over time, you could go from 100% capacity to 20% capacity, and what you do 10 years after you've been launched, or even 5 years after you launch, could be very minimal compared to what you had initially. And so there's some people out and some companies out there that are looking to license people to basically provide them with energy. And so if you had an energy beaming thing, you don't lose as much beaming across space. You do lose a lot beaming through the atmosphere.
Sure.
And so that is that's a better client, really, if you want throughput and energy capacity. But I think that's kind of the one that shows the obvious commercial viability of something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's why GE's Global Research Center has been interested, because they deal with energy and they would love to have a power infrastructure for the solar system. And so that's why they've been doing so much work on it. But, you know, we're always looking for more partners, and we've had people come and go out of the group. And, you know, I think after it gets in space, I'll have a lot more interest in people coming. Because once they see it's real if you read the chapter in the JPL report, there were a lot of things that I had wanted to do about environmental outreach and various other things, where getting like high schools involved and various other things where they could essentially talk to the tiles, ask them what they're doing, or if we had locomotion, make them do something in space, like form a shape or something. And, you know, these are all things that we'd love to do. It's just not going to be in the first prototype we put out there. Sure. It's just the first step. And it's definitely meant to be like a 10-year project, not a couple of months and then we're done. Put it in the SDI research review and it's over, right? No, it's something that hopefully will go on for a long time.
So speaking of prototypes, we've talked a little bit offline about the fact that we may actually be able to see one of these prototypes coming up in the future. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about what would we be able to see once we have a prototype in front of us. What kinds of things would we be able to do with that prototype?
So we're going to have a full Raspberry Pi on it. So there's a lot of computational power on each tile. And you could really do like a clustered application of various things. We've been talking about environmental sensing projects and other things like nature for low Earth atmosphere, or low Earth orbit. But in it, what we'd have in our hands is we'd have a prototype that essentially unfolds from a CubeSat volume into six tiles. And so it's going to look like a box, but it has these latches and various things that'll come apart in space, and they both float away. And once we have a prototype that has the propulsion system in them, the ion thrusters, then or even a packet of air, for instance. We talk about a condensed packet of air that you could puncture in six different layers. But again, they told me just focus on the first prototype, James. And so essentially you'll see something with a computational layer, the Raspberry Pi. You'll see photovoltaics on one side, and then you'll see a battery, the lithium ion battery that'll be storing energy. And so you'll be able to hopefully hold that. The prototype I have in my office right now is just showing the latching mechanisms and how it unfolds.
Sure.
So you don't see the computational unit or the photovoltaics right now. But the one at GE that they have, that they've provided a picture to me of, does have the photovoltaic layer, and it's been chromized and everything else. It looks really nice. So
this is something for our viewers to look forward to. We are planning on doing a little bit of a demonstration of this once we get it available. So. Mm-hmm. So this is very exciting. I'm a NASA geek from way back, and some of these kinds of ideas are things that, when you've watched the NASA channel, you see all kinds of animations of things that are possible. This is really coming to fruition.
Yeah.
Lots of different ideas. So that's really exciting, and I'm really looking forward to being able to touch the prototype.
Me too.
See some simulations of its functionality. So I want to thank you very much for joining us today, James. This is wonderful stuff. And I do want to mention to our viewers that the link to the Keck Institute report that has the chapter on the smart tiles will be available on the transcript for the podcast. And you've got other blog posts related to different aspects of this that will also be up there. Today's podcast, as always, is going to be at sei.cmu.edu/podcasts. And look under James Edmondson, and you'll find lots of interesting things, this.
Yeah.
I think we'll also make sure there's a link to the Ultra Large Scale Systems Report. I agree with you, James, that this report was amazing at the time, the kinds of thinking that was going on, and it was very much ahead of its time in terms of the ideas, and now some of them we're actually starting to be able to use, so I think that's wonderful. If you would also like to see this on the SEI YouTube channel, we do now have our podcast available there, as well as on the Carnegie Mellon iTunes U site. If you have any questions for us, please don't hesitate to send an email to info@sei.cmu.edu, and I thank you very much for watching.